Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, we sing the praises of Zorn.
A very busy Eric Zorn joins us. You've already said it's been a very busy morning for
you. It's been a busy morning, yeah. We had an interesting announcement at the paper. Our editorial page editor,
John
McCormick, is resigning in a couple months. And it's tough news. I you know, John and I don't agree politically with the editorial board, but he's a great guy to work for and a very supportive person. He literally needs to spend more time with his family and so on. So he's a good guy, and we were all pretty shocked by it.
I like what you just said, because it mirrors what's gone on with Ellen DeGeneres and George W. Bush, where you said, we don't agree politically, but he's a great guy.
Yes, except John's not a war criminal, and that's a
wow.
But no, it's very interesting. People say, like, you know, how do you, because the Tribune editorial board is more conservative than I am.
Yeah.
And I sit among them. I go to their meetings and I answer to the editor, and people say, how do you work with those people? And I say, they're really smart people who are really supportive and friendly.
Yes.
And we, just because we don't agree on politics, doesn't mean we can't be friends and friends.
But you just threw out the war hero thing there.
That was Ellen DeGeneres and George Bush.
Right. I know, but I mean, that's what people are doing, you know, throwing that out there. I don't agree with George Bush's politics, but if he was still drinking, I'd have a beer with him.
Well, he just looks good, I think, in comparison to Donald Trump. And that's why people have are having nostalgia for him a little bit. But you got to remember the Iraq War and some of the other things. Darlene Glanton has a very good column in the Tribune this morning about why Ellen DeGeneres should not have been breaking bread or whatever.
She said she shouldn't have been. But was the same criticism there? I'm not thinking of this. Other people have thought of this. I'm just kind of reiterating it, that Michelle Obama has had more than one episode where she's been next to George W. Bush and they have shared a laugh
or
two.
He gave her a cough drop.
Yes, he did.
Aren't there people that you work with that you don't agree with things that they do? Maybe you've heard stories, but you're still cordial to them.
Yes. I mean, cordiality is one thing. But I think that when Ellen... some people felt that Ellen went too far over the top in talking about what a great guy George Bush is in private. And I'm sure George Bush is a very congenial fellow.
He'd be a fun guy.
He does seem like a fun guy. You have to forget about some of the things that he did when he was in office. So, you know.
Certainly
in terms of our day-to-day lives, we have to learn how to separate some of those things, because this country is really, really polarized.
Going to hell in a handbasket.
Right. This is just sort of draws into what's going on in the news right now, is there are a lot of people who really enjoy how disruptive Donald Trump has been. They feel like, well, the fact that he makes people like Eric Zorn mad means that that's enough for me right there. And yet, all that stuff, having been said, you know, he has these rallies where he swears and he makes fun of AOC and he makes fun of Hunter Biden and all this chaos that he foments.
Yeah.
The chaos that he's fomenting right now in Syria is really serious stuff.
Sure it is.
This is people are dying.
Lives are being lost.
The Kurds are dying. We're betraying an ally, someone who helped us in the fight against ISIS. We are totally betraying them. We're letting them be slaughtered over there because of this bizarre, clumsy foreign policy that Donald Trump has been exercising. And so suddenly this is the kind of thing that I think a lot of people who are conservatives but not, you know, they're not wild about Trump, but they've been staying loyal to him. I think this is the kind of thing that's going to start peeling them away. It's already peeled away a few people like Mitt Romney, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're going to see more of them saying, "Wait a minute, you know, yeah, it was all fun and games when he was calling people names and being disruptive and unconventional. But that this kind of unconventionality, this kind of foreign policy, where we, you know, he has a conversation on a Sunday night with the strongman leader of Turkey, and then the next day he announces that we're pulling our troops out, and suddenly the Turks go in, and now they're slaughtering the Kurds, and the Kurds are now going, and they're going to align themselves with Bashar al-Assad in Syria, who is in league with Putin, and all these ISIS prisoners are being freed from their prisons in northern Syria, and This is bad. This is, you know, you talk about this, you know, the impeachment.
Yes.
Issue that we've been dealing with.
Yes.
But this particular issue, I think, is going to hit home with a whole swath of conservatives and Republicans who are unmoved by some of the other stuff that Trump said. When Trump says, oh, yeah, China should investigate Joe Biden, and he has this phone call that,
right.
That we've read about. I think a lot of people have been saying, oh, that's just a witch hunt. It's just noise. This is, I think, a different thing. I think this is a different kind of crisis for his presidency, because the one thing that he needed to do, all he needed to do, was to keep those Republican senators in line
mm-hmm.
as the impeachment inquiry goes along, because the Democrats are almost certain to vote to impeach him. They're not going to do a, oh, never mind, you know, we looked into
not this. Not at this point.
They're too far in.
So yeah.
They're going to do that. And as you know, an impeachment is like an indictment. It's
yeah.
not... It's not people confuse the language when we're not thinking about this a lot. They think, oh, impeached means you're gone. No, if you're impeached, you're sent over to the Senate for a trial. There's a red wall right now of senators who are not going to... You need two-thirds of the Senate to vote to impeach, and that's just not going to happen.
Right.
So, well, I should say, it wasn't going to happen 2 weeks ago, for sure.
But now because of this...
But now, there's a chance. It's a small chance, but now you may see that some Republicans are saying, look, we don't want to ride this horse in 2020. We want to move our party on, because he's destroying our party. We are running the risk of getting clobbered at the ballot box. Trump could win, but a bunch of senators could go down over this. And so I could actually see this being an excuse, like, well, you know, the other stuff was just a witch hunt, but not this. This has crossed a line, because it really has crossed a line for a lot of Republicans.
When they vote on impeachment, is their vote public record or not public
record?
Yes,
of course.
It is.
Yes, yeah.
Do you think that influences some votes?
Well, yeah, I'm definitely. It does.
Why can't they make it like a private thing?
Like a jury, you mean, where they go back
into
the room and argue it out? It's interesting. I think probably in part because it is a political act. Impeachment and removal are both political acts, so you want to have your political acts.
But couldn't you make the argument, based on what you just said, that it's in the best interest, or better interest anyway, for that particular vote to be a private
situation? You know, that's a really good question. It's a good thought, too, because you're probably right. And you hear this all the time on the chat shows, which is Republicans saying, people saying, oh, I talk to Republicans all the time, and they're all privately mortified about Trump. They're all like... wash their hands of him, but publicly they come out, and I mean, they're like the Lindsey Graham people who are like, oh, he's a great man, our president, but secretly they're like, wow, I wish we could get rid of this guy, but they're all afraid of him because he attacks. He's a very good attack dog.
Uh-huh.
So this is a very interesting, it's a pivotal point. It's come so quickly after the whole Ukraine thing, right?
Yeah,
the whole transcript of the phone call, and the Democrats were all upset about that, and then they do the impeachment inquiry, and then following right after this, he has the Senate. He doesn't, you know, there's no way he's going to lose those votes in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly he makes it, maybe he will lose them. Maybe they will just say, look, we cannot have 5 more years of this kind of foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
That this may spiral the Middle East way out of control again, a situation that was getting somewhat stabilized over there. So I'm interested in watching that.
Thank you for teaching me a new word, foment. I had to look
foment.
It up.
Foment.
You know what it means, Bill?
Not positive.
I had to look it up, and I'm going to use it in my vocabulary from now on. It's to instigate or stir up.
I thought you just said ferment incorrectly. I thought you were saying
it
just
very
a little.
Politely, didn't
I didn't want to correct you.
Speaking of words, I have another thing to talk
wait,
about.
Wait, Eric,
words.
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
We'll take a break, and then Eric Zorn has something else to discuss with you, so stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. I have a leftover question for you, Eric, from segment one, but I think it still holds true today. The identity of the whistleblower or whistleblowers should or should not be made public.
Should not.
Should not be made public.
Absolutely not. You know, that ad for Permaseal reminds me of a joke.
What is the joke?
It's an old joke. A guy's going down the road, and it's raining, and a guy's sitting on his front porch, and the water's pouring in, and he says, hey, farmer, well, you know, your roof is leaking. Why don't you fix it? He goes, I can't fix it. It's raining.
Yeah.
The guy says, well, why don't you fix it when it's not raining? He goes, well, it doesn't leak then. Anyway, I should just stand up tonight.
You should definitely be doing stand up. Come on.
So speaking of, we're talking about language and words.
Yes.
I did an item in my Sunday column. You know, there's lots going on in the world, and this was the thing that leapt to the top of my column. The Bears did not play on Sunday.
No.
And this is widely said that they had a bye week.
Yes.
Now, you know, Bill, you play tournament tennis, so you know what a bye is.
I have no idea.
You really don't? No?
No.
It's a free pass to the next round.
Well, I know what it is. I don't know where the derivative of the... Why is
I don't actually... I looked into this. I don't... It's hard to tell because bias is... You know, it's a word... It's just a word that's lost to antiquity in some ways. But it has been used since, I think, the 1500s. And it comes from cricket. The sport of cricket. And I guess if you miss the wicket and the guy behind the wicket doesn't get the ball, then the guy gets to run. It's kind of like a wild pitch, I guess, in baseball.
Oh.
And it's called a bye because you get a run, but the batsman didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So in a sense, it's like you're getting an advantage by not doing anything.
Right.
And in tournaments, so the term then, I guess a couple hundred years later, became used in tournament play where you would say, like, okay, when you have like an uneven number of competitors, like you've got nine people and one of them gets a bye into the next round.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to play. And they sort of, it's like you're assumed a victory over a phantom opponent, in a sense. You don't have to play, but you get to advance in the tournament.
I wish all the Bears games were bye weeks.
Well, but things are
that would be all right.
That we'd win.
It's not a bye, and this drives me crazy.
It's not, is
yes,
it?
I looked in the news archives. I found references going back to the 1930s, where when football teams have the day off, it was referred to as a bye.
Mm-hmm.
And this it was used occasionally up into the 60s, and in the 1960s the NFL used to have a week off, and then they stopped, and there was a period from like the 66 to 90 where every Sunday your team played throughout the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1990 they began this process of giving each team an idle week, 1 week off, and that allows them to extend the season to make it longer for advertising purposes. Wow. For TV contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like I think it was at that point.
You mean they're doing this for financial reasons?
Yes,
Eric? I can't believe
you think just for the pure sporting.
Wait, I thought if you had a Thursday night game, then you wouldn't play Sunday because of a time restraint more than to extend the season.
Is
a bye.
Well, I think when did they start doing? No, that's not a bye. But they used to do. They did this before Monday Night Football came first, and then they did Thursday Night Football.
But they still called it Monday Night Football, even though it was on Thursday.
They did that. That's a bye.
That's wrong. Yeah. If I had known that, I would have written a column on
you
that.
You don't
too.
Play if you play on Thursday. You don't then play on Sunday. Thursday is your Sunday game,
right?
You're playing the week. You're just playing a different time during the week.
Yeah.
And so they started doing this, and for some reason, sports writers and everybody else started just calling it a bye week. And it has nothing to do with a bye, and there's no sense. You're just off.
There's no advantage.
It's just you don't get an advantage. They don't say, oh, we're going to give you a victory this week. We're going to pretend that you won the game, and yet this has become such common usage. And I felt like I was becoming one of those curmudgeons who's
You are.
Yeah,
but you definitely are
railing against this usage that's so common that.
But look at in baseball and the playoff structure of baseball. Every team that makes the playoffs, with the exception of the wild card teams, does get a bye. They don't have to play that first round, which is a one game
play-in. Yes.
Play-in, yeah. So it would be accurate there, but it's not called a bye week there. It's,
no, it is. When you have a day off in baseball, sometimes a team will have a Tuesday or Monday off. They don't call it a bye.
What about hockey? They go back to back to back to back.
But when they have a game off, they don't call it a bye. They just, they're just off.
So the correct terminology would be and should be what?
Idle or
an idle
or
week
off.
Or an off week.
Off week, yeah.
But the Bears have had off weeks for the last 6 years.
And they're idle frequently as well.
That's true. So anyway, I made a stink about this. And of course, sports fans pushed back. They always do.
What was the pushback?
They just, well, first of all, I mean, they, this is the way people talk. And it's true. You know, there are, you know, those of us who like to try to hang on to the original meaning of words.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, decimate used to mean cut into 10 pieces. And now it means just to destroy something and so on. And a lot of people think that literally and figuratively are now
synonymous,
because people use literally to mean figuratively all the time. Like, that book literally exploded in my hands, you know.
I use a word incorrectly, and I don't know who started it, but it's not just me. When I think something's really funny, I'm like, that's hysterical. That is not, my 16-year-old corrected me. He's like, it should be, that's hilarious. Hysterical means someone's in hysterics and going crazy.
But you can laugh hysterically.
Yes, you can.
And you know, Wendy, that's considered to be a sexist term. Because hyster comes from...
Hysterectomy.
The same root as hysterectomy. Yeah, so it's
hysterectomy from now on instead of hysterically.
That's
it's
what
it's
hysterectomy.
That is hysterectomy.
If you say a joke is hysterical, you're clearly, that's positive. But if you say, she's hysterical, she's carrying on. People used to say that about Hillary Clinton whenever she would raise her voice.
Exactly.
She's hysterical. And that was, you know, linguistically, it's a sexist insult. So.
And it's used incorrectly. It should be hilarious.
Right. And again, I try not to be too much of a fuss pot about language, but this one, this bothers me every year. The Bears have a week off, and they say it's a bye week. It's not a bye week.
Also in sports, here's a couple. It's been a thing now forever in baseball. It was the leader in RBIs. He's got 80 RBIs. He's got 115 RBIs. But now that term is being called RBI instead of RBIs because it's not run batted ins.
It should be RSBI.
RSBI. Do they now say is that not how they say it?
A lot of announcers have switched to RBI.
He has 49 RBI.
Yeah, some are not though. Some are saying no. It's been RBI since the beginning of time.
Can I get a column out of this?
That's an easy
ribbies.
Column.
I like to call it ribbies.
Ribbies. That's a good one.
And then the other one is one that I think we talked about with you recently. I think, and that is that in pro sports, most notably football and basketball, they don't want to call the owners of teams owners anymore.
Right. I think the NBA distanced themselves from...
Yeah.
This is news to me. Yeah. I heard this last
because
week for
owners,
the first time.
Because most of the people who have controlling financial interests in teams are old white men.
Yeah.
And a lot of the players in the NBA are African American.
Yeah. So
what do you could just manager?
Owner. No,
see?
Oops.
What
do you say? Bye?
No.
Hysterical?
I don't know.
Yeah, hysterectomy.
Hysterical men.
That's how it is. We solved some problems, didn't we, Eric?
We did.
That's Eric Jordan. Read him in the
and
Chicago.
And created some new ones.
And we started way more new ones than we let go of.